percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Hi there. It is amazing. So many things going on. This is the wrap-up of the summer when we're talking about all this good stuff, just in case you're podcast listening and it's, you know, January. Summer's still here in this world. And it's doing all sorts of exciting things, thunderstorms, heat waves, and duck crossings. I like this one. Sometimes it's a little hard to find the positive news, the inspiring news, the perky news, and that's what I do. That's my mission, to find that stuff. Three lanes of traffic came to a screeching halt. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So a family of ducks could cross the road. Where did this wonderful thing happen? In New Zealand. Thank you, New Zealand, for giving us a positive perk. What happened was, apparently Mama decided it was a good time to cross, and that's, you know what happens when Mama says go. It's like, okay, Mom. And they hightail it across the first fast lane of traffic, and the people stopped. And I'm looking at, you know, like 5-6 lanes of traffic here. And so this is really, really intense crossing. And all three of the 5 of 6 lane thoroughfares stopped. It was so cool. Now, they did need some help after they got across. Apparently, they called the road crew to help make sure that they were taken somewhere else. But that's viral. And so definitely worth passing on. The other fun stuff, the mystery sky glow apparently has its own name. And the name that they give everything they don't know anything about, Steve. So it's a like a glowing light over Canada. Scientists aren't sure, supposedly, they're not sure what it is, and they just decided that Steve is not an aurora, all right? This is from a physicist. It's not me making this up. Steve is not an aurora, but they don't know exactly what Steve is, and they say it's completely unknown to science. So until they figure out more about it, they'll just be referring, you know, hey, what's Steve up to today? I like it. Scientists are real people. And they have come up with the mathematical model for the time machine. They say it's viable. Mathematically, it's possible. I don't want to be the first one to try the thing out, just in case. In case you're going to volunteer me or something. And then my favorite story, well, aside from the fact that there's a ferry contingent that is very well known, and you go travel to, was it Devon? One of the top countries for ferry sightings. Okay. Oh, no, maybe it's counties. Oops. That changed that story. Anyway, that was one I just kind of glossed over, that and the fact that the woman wants to marry and have a baby with a ghost. These things are fun. But the one that I really like, Homer Simpson would be proud of, evolution may favor laziness. And KU, the researcher, is from KU. Yeah, that's our neck of the woods. Says that they've looked at over 300 species of slugs, snails, and mollusks that have existed for the past 5.3 million years. And the ones with the high metabolic rates, in other words, the speedy, go-get-em, yee-haw ones, are, they apparently, they poop out quicker. So unfortunately, for the, you know, got to get there first, early bird gets the worm kind of thing, it's like the lazy one who waits till all the early birds duke it out over who's going to get the best part of the worm. They're going, yeah, right, okay. Yeah, they're all knocked out, and that one says, here, look at me, I got it. Hauls away the booty. All right, so there you go. The laziness survey, it will make you proud of being a couch potato. Now, I don't know if it translates to humans, but it does, you know, less stress is in your favor. So my guest might be able to mention or give you a few tips on stress and less stress and what it's like to be in the fast lane, the slow lane, the intermediate lane, medium, moderate. Leslie Lupo. NDE, near-death experiencer. And I love talking with people who've had these experiences because everybody has their own unique perspective, and they're all fantastic. And Leslie is, in so many ways, kind of like a headliner, because her book is coming out. It isn't out yet. November 2018 is the release date I had. And with this, though, she has a huge list of basically, you know, anybody who has a name in the near-death, after-death research field is giving an endorsement for Leslie's book, Every Breath is Precious. Remember, Every Breath is Precious, coming out this year, 2018. Leslie, thank you. You're in Arizona, so thanks for making the time to talk. I'm so thrilled that you are finally, you've got the book out about this, because it took you a little while, didn't it?
Yes, it actually happened 30 years ago, and it took me a while before I'd even talk about it, much less write about it. So, yeah,
well, so if you would walk us back, because there was also an intense recovery period that went along with this. What mm-hmm. happened?
Well, I was working at a dude ranch, and they have a lot of horses. I was married to the owner, and you jump in where you're needed, and one of the wranglers was short that day. So I jumped in and helped in the wrangling department. And I'm very familiar with horses. I've been around them all my life, and I was helping them do certain things. At the end of the day, I was helping them unsaddle. I'd be bringing horses up and, you know, curry them, etc. Two horses got out and ran down to the hay barn before they were unsaddled. So I grabbed a couple of halters and walked down to get them, and they were standing side by side in a big, huge mass of about 90 horses. And I was trying to wiggle my way through between them. Unfortunately, the saddles I was getting caught up on, if they were slick, you know, just horses, you can slide in, but the leather. So I turned around and I grabbed onto the saddles because I'd gotten up to the cinches, and I was pushing back, trying to push my way through. Because horses, you know, they're nice animals, but when they're eating and there's a herd of them, they just ignore you. They're
yes.
like, no, yeah. I'll get you later. And as soon as I turned around and started pushing, suddenly, like my mind, or I didn't know what it was, because at the time I was an agnostic bordering on an atheist, popped out and was standing about 20 feet away, looking back at myself, struggling between these horses. And I was so shocked. I sat there, and I couldn't even think. I was like, what? Wait, what? And I heard a horse kind of give a screech, and then they kind of bolted all around me.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, I got spun around, and my arm went through the stirrup up to my shoulder, and I got dragged. And when horses are panicky and running, they don't need dead weight on them. So the horse I was attached to was kicking and slammed me right into the hay barn. It just crushed my skull, and I watched my body drop. And, I mean, I was fighting and screaming. It wasn't like when I popped out, I fainted. It was like, no, my body was still going through what it would normally go through, fighting for its life. And the interesting thing was I felt such serenity watching it. I felt such peacefulness. I didn't feel any fright or terror. I obviously didn't feel anything that my body was going through, because she was screaming and fighting, you know, and trying to get her way out of this, her, you know, cluster of horses. And it was so funny, because it was like, okay, this is the way it ends, you know, kind of like you take off a jacket or a pair of tight shoes and you toss them on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like so different. I felt very light. I felt like all my cells had separated, and there was this beautiful little breeze kind of going through that just lit me up. I felt so much more alert, but I knew I was dead. And when I looked at my body, I there was no doubt. I didn't think I was unconscious or that this was a dream. It's just so ultra real, like as if you are sitting in your chair and someone would come and say to you, no, this is a dream, you'd say, no, this is real. I'm sitting here. I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I did was I started looking around the corral at everything, because your eyesight is like more alert, your sounds are more alert, everything is so much more electric and alive. And I started giggling, and I thought, the first thing I thought was, this is it.
Hold on, Leslie. Okay, we're going to stop right there. Leslie Lupo is my guest. the book, Remember, Every Breath is Precious, Going into the Near Death, What Started It All Here 30 Years Ago, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Leslie Lupo. Now, Leslie, we're getting into that near-death experience, and the book, Every Breath is Precious. Remember, every breath is precious. Whoops, the mind's taking a detour there. But I wanted to also say that she's also an intuitive therapist, and she is certified in neuro-linguistic programming, and she's a Reiki master, and she counsels people on, if you're, you know, you don't have to have had a near-death experience, but just a basic idea of what it's like going to and coming back from that state of being and being in between. So we're going to pick up here with a story, because this is where it gets interesting. You are in basically kind of in two places. The body's one place, the essence is another, and you're observing, and you're in a state of like, okay, it's done, it's over, and you're kind of giggling. And that was like kind of odd. how would that be when you're doing that?
Well, everyone's so afraid of dying. And so my first thought was, this is it. This is what everyone's so afraid of. I'm still here. I'm still thinking. That's the absolute first thing that popped in my mind. And I was happy, because you don't die. I didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was amazed. And especially at how everything was so much more exaggerated. My sight was better. My hearing was better. The smells were stronger. It was like your brain is so electric. You know, everything was processing so beautifully. How we get overwhelmed sometimes, and when we're trying to multitask, it was like everything you sense times 100, and it was just beautiful. It was like a symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the rides came in. The last two rides came up to the bottom gate, and I felt such waves of nostalgia, like, oh, I know what they're going to do. I've done that before, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like you would feel like if you went into a grade school and you were watching children do their addition and subtraction tables, you know, and you'd be sitting there watching them, kind of remembering when you were that age. It was that kind of nostalgia. And then Tucson just started to fade away. It just kind of began to just fade. I wasn't in a tunnel. I didn't feel myself rising. I actually felt like I was a little off the ground to begin with. I wasn't touching the ground, because when I looked down, I kind of saw that I was floating. And when I looked down originally, I thought, oh, my ghost, you know, can I see it? And I couldn't, you know, I looked just like me with the clothes, you know. But I had this interesting kind of little neon blue light around me. It was very just like a little hairline around me. And then Tucson just went into this kind of fog. And I had a sense almost like things were moving around me rather than going up or down or sideways. I felt very stationary. But as Tucson faded, another world kind of came into view,
mm-hmm.
which was a very thick forest. It was evolving around me immediately and then kind of rolling out in any direction around me. And it was extraordinary, because it was so lush and this particular beautiful shades of green, but everything was lit from within. It was, there wasn't a sun, there weren't any shadows around, and I was just overwhelmed with this feeling of this extraordinary selfless love. Just everything was loving me. I was loving all. I mean, it was pouring out of me, and it was coming into me. But it almost felt like the best way is like walking through like cotton candy or spun sugar. It's just like palpable. It was such a strong sensation of this immense love that we have,
mm-hmm.
Capable. You know, that we're capable of. And I looked around a little, I walked around a little, and it's not like really walking. It's kind of like you look someplace and you think, I'd like to go there, and you're there. So it was like kind of a series of steps rather than how we walk on earth where you take step.
Yeah.
This was just like boom, boom, and I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at myself. I thought, oh, what do I look like? I was touching my hair. I have long hair, and up there I have kind of short, big curls hair. And I was like, oh, short hair. I like long hair, you know. And I looked at my skin, looked like I was 20 again, only I had kind of big penny-sized freckles that were real kind of golden yellow. And I was a lady, and I had a long dress on. It was kind of this beautiful, rich blue color with embroidery on it. And I noticed there were ferns, there was beautiful moss and everything. It was just this lush, kind of thick old forest. And I turned to my left, and there was a table with some people sitting at it. And I went over to the table to, meet them, because I figured, well, this is where I have to go. And the interesting thing was, as alert and electric as I was back where I started, upstairs, I was like groggy. It was almost like trying to walk underwater, you know. And I got there, and all this information was coming to me telepathically, and it was also coming in big chunks of information, like an immediate download. It wasn't linear like I'm speaking now.
Mm-hmm.
And as I walked up, there was, I just kind of went to, I guess what I knew was my place and my seat at this table. There was 11 others seated there. And they began to explain to me that they showed me in this little ball of energy. It was like a 3D movie of the accident. And what had caused the horses to spook was that the dominant horse of the herd, which is called a herd boss, came down and nipped one of the horses so he could eat without, waiting.
Right.
And they bolted on both sides of him, and I got caught up in it. And then they had to make a decision. They said I could stay. I was supposed to die much earlier, and I had opted to stay, which is fine. If you want to stay and help, that's okay. But I could stay upstairs, or I could come back to Earth. And so we talked about, Which do you want to do? And we kind of looked at all the options a little bit. But then Rao was the man, and the woman, the only two that actually I discussed with was a man named Rao and a woman named Mina. And then Mina had asked me, and Rao said, why don't you walk around a little? So Rao and I walked around a little. He took me to a cave where it's someplace I like to go. We actually looked over a cliff edge, and I saw almost a whole nother realm of these beings,
Mm-hmm.
Also, our blue lights were a lot stronger up there. We all had that same kind of beautiful electric blue flowing, and they were just kind of, you could see the energy flowing off the people.
Okay, now hang on, because a lot of this is in the book, and so we want to leave some of it so that people can go into it. There was also an encounter that you said you met Jesus, and the other
yes.
thing too about this is that you had been intuitive, you had had these other premonition type things prior, but kind of suppressed that. So this whole
yeah.
experience basically shifts you from being on the back burner to being front and center. We got to take a break.
Okay.
So we're going to come back and say that is the intro to the near-death experience. And then the outcome when you come back, and we'll say what the trigger was to get you to come back, that's a different direction than what you had been living previously. So, all right, we're talking with Leslie Lupo, my guest, near-death experiencer, and extraordinary story, and so extraordinary that the list of people who are endorsing her is, if you've heard the name in near-death research or after-death research, afterlife research, you're going to recognize them. So this is quite an amazing story, and we're going to continue with it. If you want to get the book, it's coming out 2018, the book Every Breath is Precious. Coming up next, it's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. If you're looking for us on the podcast, it's Audio Boom, or just go to wendyscoffeehouse.com and you'll find the links. But this is a story, I think, whenever you talk to somebody who's had a near-death experience, it's always enlightening, no matter what it is and how it's happened. It's an extremely unique experience with what it's like to be functioning and aware and present without the physical form. And no matter how many people try to say it doesn't exist, it's not possible. Well, Eben Alexander is one of those who's been there, done that, and has a neurosurgeon background to quantify it. And there are some other people who have been studying this for years, Kenneth Ring and Moody. These are all ways of viewing a perspective that give you a sense that we are in an amazing period right now while we're breathing. And the book coming out, Remember Every Breath is Precious, is what we learn from Leslie is there are different dimensions and different ways of being. And this is something I thought was important because you talk about in the book, knowing when you were a kid, you had this kind of this psychic, this intuitive awareness. And then you said no. What happened? I mean, if you're listening and you heard the intro, all of that is in the book. So I'm just kind of speeding up into some other elements so that we can cover more territory. But you knew things ahead of time. How'd that work?
When I was really little, I would just see things sometimes before they happened. I would see kind of like our guardian angels. And I was driving with my mom one time, and I witnessed in my mind's eye a car accident. And two blocks later, it happened right in front of us. And I was very young, like 7 or 8, and I thought I had caused it. And it caused me to kind of shut down that part of me that was intuitive, because I thought that I made that happen and I didn't have anyone to tell me different.
Well, there was another part of that, though. When you told your mom, because you were giving her a warning, you said, I see the white car, the red car, they're going to have an accident. Your mom said, no. And it didn't happen immediately. Like you said, two blocks. So your mom is there processing, telling you, oh, no, you're just imagining. That was just no. So you got that information and that message from mom. And then it happened and there was no more discussion.
Right. And she didn't say anything. She kind of looked at me odd and she mussed up my hair, but that was it. And, you know, when you feel when you're a child and you feel you've made a horrible mistake, you don't tend to say, Mom, see, I told you, or I caused that. You tend to kind of go inward, which is what I did, and my mom kind of didn't really pay attention to it. So I shut down, and you can shut your intuition down.
Yes, yeah. And when you're not ready for it, and it's overwhelming, it's gone.
Absolutely, exactly. You can go, nope, I'm just going to my logical brain, and you can just, I call that my like inner, you know, eyes, and I just shut them down. I can still remember curling up and going, no, I didn't do that. I just felt so horrible.
One thing I'll tell you, I've had this experience. I was in college and I would practice seeing the bottom card on the deck, and I would turn the key in the door and I would know the bottom card on the deck. I knew what it was. It's like, okay, here it is. And I've got the bottom card. Then something happened in the room where my roommate, she said, we were talking about ghosts. And she's facing me, sitting on the bed, and the window's open behind her. And at that point, the curtains went straight out, horizontal, to the floor. Mm-hmm. And she's going, this is just like the scene of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. I do believe in ghosts. I do believe in ghosts. And I thought, whatever I am doing is creating this trauma drama. I'm going to stop because I've opened a door. I don't know what's happening. And so I shut it down. I said, no way, because
100%.
Of that.
I understand that.
So that's one of those little windows you say, I'm not ready.
And, you know, it's just energy. It's just energy, and there's all sorts of loving beings around us. And we're evolving to the point where it's becoming more commonplace. And science is discovering physics, like you mentioned, are people like that, like Dean Radin and Irvin Laszlo are discovering these things that are out there that are beneficial, loving, kind, good, and yet we're terrified because it's not within our five senses, it's in that sixth sense, the intuition.
You have to be comfortable with that and have some kind of a template, and I think that's what happened with you with a near-death experience. You became, at that point, intimately familiar with this that it wasn't a negative. It wasn't meant to be frightening. Like with my intuition there, it wasn't meant to be frightening. It was like an affirmation of, yes, here we are. Like, oh, yes. Whoops. Whoops.
Yeah.
So with that, then you bring this back when you are recovering. You're recovering and you're trying to talk about it. And what was the threat with that?
Boy, did I get shut down. Now, this was 30 years ago, and I hadn't discovered Raymond Moody and people like that, Ken Ring. And it was funny because I had amnesia. I had, like, total amnesia to who I was. But I remembered my near-death experience, every single detail of it, because it was so joyous, and I wanted to share it. I wanted to say, guys, heaven exists. You don't die, you know. When you pop out of your body, you don't even feel your death. And I wanted to, like, you just want to share it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone, my neurologist that was taking care of me, I was in the hospital about 2.5 months. It was a massive head injury. I had my CAT scans. I show them to neurologists. They don't believe it. And here I've got a doctor, and he's telling my whole family that I'm psychotic, I'm having hallucinations, not to encourage me, to shut me down. And he finally came in one night, and he sat down at the edge of my bed, and he started poking me in the shoulder with every word. And he says, telling me, if I keep talking about this, he's going to switch me to a psychiatric hospital and pump me up with so many drugs, I won't know if it's day or night.
Mm.
And that terrified me, because I'll never, ever feel so powerless as I did right then, because he could have.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing I could do, because no one in my family believed me. They all thought that I was, like, out of it. I had one friend that used to come, and she was the one that kept encouraging me to talk about it. She would sneak in.
The pretend sister.
Pretending to be my sister. And she snuck in, like, a cranial sacral therapist and a homeopathic physician as my fellow siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept treating me also through my coma. I was in a coma and all that.
So
it was scary, and it scared me so much. It literally took me about 10 or 11 years before I would even talk about it, because anytime I would say something, you know, my family would go, oh, she's going psychotic again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm not psychotic. I'm highly intelligent. I know right from wrong. I know life from fantasy. And it shut me down, even to the point where I went to a spiritual group, and the title was, What Brought You Back to Your Faith? And I thought, oh, this is great for me, because, like I said, I was, like, borderline atheist when this happened. So I went in, and I mentioned what had happened and everything, and people were interested. And the facilitator just shut me down and said, you know, we don't, fine, that was before, who's next? And at the door, asked me not to come back because she didn't want to promote my fantasy. And the thing is this, I knew it was real, but when that many people are pointing fingers at you, you have to go inside and say, was this a psychotic break? So I started doing a little bit of research on my own of these psychotic breaks, et cetera, and what's the difference, because my background is, you know, a psychologist in training. In college, that was my degree.
Okay, hold on. So you're getting into that. And basically, but coming back and going forward, you found a place to land. And you are supporting other people who know they aren't psychotic and know this isn't a fantasy and it isn't fiction.
Right.
It's an extraordinary awakening to a different part of reality. Okay, so hang on. We're going to pick up there. My guest again, Leslie Lupo, the book, you're going to want to read this. Remember, Every Breath is Precious. Coming up on KCMO Talk Radio. Gonna be some sweet sounds coming down. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. This is the thing. I talk to people about all these experiences because there's a huge difference between 30 years ago and my college experience of shutting this stuff down and saying, no, 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 go away because I'm not ready for it. And now, where more people are talking and sharing and experiencing and saying, there's more to this. We have to share the experience. So, from that experience you had 30 years ago, and everybody's saying, go away, don't talk about it, you're frightening us, you are now at the point where you've been invited to share the story. Where?
Yes, at the University of Arizona Medical School. They've invited me to come in and do once a semester a presentation, a lecture. I have my CAT scans. And they've invited me to come in and talk every semester to the interns and the residents and any of the doctors that work in surgery or places where people die and are resuscitated.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can share with them my story and the aftercare. They want to focus on the things that were done incorrectly with me.
Well, there are a lot of things that go on with this, because I know, like Anita Morjani with the stage 4 cancer, a lot of people who are checking out and told, you're not coming back, and they tell the family, this person is gone, just be nice, you know, and then be mm-hmm. nice, remember to say nice things while they're in a coma because they can hear. This is a different way of treating people, and it's still new.
It's totally new. I mean, I just got this invitation like 10 days ago. I have to tell you, I cried. I mean, I was happy tears crying, but it was such a relief to realize how much they've changed, that this is, they're inviting, you know, me to come in and speak with, and treating me with honor rather than like throwing me out of the room
mm-hmm.
and asking me not to come back again. It's such a beautiful, it was worth it to keep that light alive, to never give up on it, to know that it was real and stick to my guns, you know, but it was amazing.
So now in the hospital setting, you have an invitation rather than an excommunication.
Yes.
Like, that's a good, the other
absolutely.
Thing, for people who are, if you're listening, this is something that each person can do themselves. I like your philosophy. The love you attract mirrors the love you feel for yourself. And if you don't
yes.
cherish yourself, you invite people who ignore your needs, because they're just reflecting you. It's a mirror
yes.
and you're getting what you put out. This is something you teach. This is a way of improving self-worth by looking at self-esteem.
Yes. Well, I went back into my psychology, you know, background, which is one of the options when we talked about what are you going to do downstairs. This is Earth, by the way. Upstairs is Heaven. Mina had mentioned you have this background. You've learned so many life lessons that you share with people. You may as well go back and do this. And she told me there'd be this little place of light beings that was near me that I would wind up working. And so I went back, got everything. But one of the things I learned was in my own journey was, if I don't love myself first, then everything else is a reflection of that. And self-love, in my opinion, is rooted in humility. It's not vanity. It's not narcissism. I think in our growing years, when we run into a narcissist, we say, I will never do that, but we go too far the other direction. I mean, we can be selfless to a fault. We want to be loving everyone and ourselves. We want to include ourselves in our decisions. Is this in my highest good, too, is something all my clients learn to ask so that they're doing what's best for all, you know, not just best for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's been quite the journey. I've got, like, a stack of thank yous as tall as me probably by now. And it's just such a delight to see people hit that light within themselves and go, and get it. You know, it's just like, thank you, God, you know, that I can do this.
Yes, yes. Well, the thing I want to get back to, the endorsements you have from like I was saying, the laundry list of people who are name recognition folks in this field. You've got Dr. Pim Van Lommel, Dean Radin, Raymond Moody, Kenneth Ring, Irvin Laszlo, Bruce Grayson, Susan Giesman. Is that the way I'm pronouncing it correctly?
Yes, Giesman.
Okay, she's a psychic and was helpful with you to validate some of your experiences
mm-hmm.
without even knowing your background.
Mm-hmm.
That was also another extraordinary hit, spot on affirmation of yes, this person was able to validate it. And then the other person who gave you a fabulous forward, Dr. Gary Schwartz, and mm-hmm. that you have had a long term relationship connection with him as well. And he studies mediums and after death and afterlife research. I've got a couple of his books. This is an amazing lifestyle you came back to.
I know. It's like I still pinch myself. I'm just so blessed, you know. It's just come complete around. You know, I think when you find your gift within and you allow the good karma to come back to you, I think that, you know, I think it just really amazes me how wonderful things happen. It's not like I'm never going to cry again or have my heart broken again. I had a guy dump me. I was dating because he found out how bad my head injury was. And he said, I don't want to push you around in a wheelchair.
Ah.
I mean, seriously. And I was like, well, thank you for letting me know this ahead of time, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Bye. You know, it's just like, oh, my goodness. So you still have ups and downs in life. But I think that connection to the divine within is, which everyone has, is that helps keep you buoyant and, you know, I don't know.
There's a huge message when you talk in here, and it's in the book, don't take it personal.
Yeah, exactly.
The other people have their own issues, and like his rejection of you wasn't, it wasn't about you, honestly.
No.
That was about him. He's like, I can't cope.
It was his bear trap. It was his pain.
Yeah.
And I didn't fight to keep him. You know, in fact, someone said to me, well, maybe you could get a prenup because we were at the marriage stage. And that your kids will take care of you. And I looked at her. I'm just like, no, thank you.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, marriage is the hardest job on the planet.
It's a team.
It takes two adults in it that adore each other and work for each other. And if you have someone that's selective, that you may have something happen to you.
Yes.
You're like, nothing.
Projecting it out there constantly. Oh, no, you're going to have an accident. Oh, no, this is going to regress. Okay, so with Raul, you get these incredible messages, and these are your spirit guides. This is your soul group. These are the people, the essences, the energies, the energy that supports you and says, all right, you're going back. We support you. Do you see them now?
Oh, yes, they're always with me.
And other people have them, too.
Everyone has them. Everyone has spiritual guides. It's just they're so shut down to them, they don't realize it. And that's the sad thing. A lot of people will look at me like, well, you've had this special experience. You don't have to jump in front of a truck to have that special experience. You have it with just by quieting the mind and hearing that inner voice that we all have and that inner connection. And that's all it takes. It doesn't take anything fancy. You don't have to pay anything to do it. It's just learning how to still the mind through meditation and prayer.
In the last last minute. And so when you came back, you were given the instruction.
Yeah, it was funny because when I started to come back, it was a crushing feeling, and I didn't like it. And Rao stopped it and said, you don't have to do it. And I said, I will. And then he said to me the most beautiful thing. He said, remember, every breath is precious, and that gratitude always is with me, and that's why that's the title of the book.
All right. So there you go. All right. Now, if you're listening, the book comes out 2018. November is the date that I have, and if you want to find out more, check out Leslie's information, Leslie Lupo. And this is something that each and every person can do for him or herself. Just give yourself permission to not take everything so personal and look and see what the message is from the other side where you're going. Thank you for listening. Leslie, thank you. Thank you. And I'm thrilled that you have finally written your story.
Well, we'll see.
See ya. Thanks for listening.